80-90% people are good. They want to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
The bias comes in because we don't have all the information. Suddenly I get an army of another 20 people who are comfortable doing any amount of grunt work for me. What more can I do? How can I make my company a lot happier, a lot more efficient, right? Follow your heart, but stay true to yourself. If you want to do something, actually do it, commit to it, have a big impact, right?
Welcome to today's episode of Future Work, the podcast about a happier future of work and the role of people and technology within that. In this edition, I have the pleasure of speaking with Ashutosh Garg, the founder and CEO of Eightfold, a unicorn HR tech platform that brings AI to improve the entire talent lifecycle, companies, and the world of work. Ashutosh brings a wealth of experience from his early days pioneering personalization at Google to now helping companies like Ernst & Young, Bayer, Morgan Stanley, and Starbucks use AI to revolutionize how talents are managed and nurtured in the workforce. Today, he'll share insight from his journey and how AI can play a pivotal role in enhancing our work lives. So let's dive in. This episode of Future Work is brought to you by Tectic. Does your hybrid office feel like chaos? Who's in the office? Where are they sitting? What meeting rooms are available? Luckily, I have a solution for you. Tectic is the number one rated space logistics platform used by customers like Microsoft, Red Bull, the United Nations, and Northwestern University to create order out of chaos. Tectic has a 100% customer satisfaction score on G2 because it was built from the ground up with the end user in mind. It's an all-in-one solution for hot desking, room reservations, and visitor management. Visit gettectic.com/work and start your free trial today. Thanks so much to the Tectic team for sponsoring this episode. And now onto the podcast. Ashutosh, thanks so much for being on today. Great to have you.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me to this podcast, Dan.
This is amazing. My first unicorn CEO, for sure. So you're currently leading Eightfold, which we definitely want to learn more about. But maybe just a little bit of introduction about yourself. And I know you moved to the US a long time ago. You've been in the Bay Area for quite a while. What has life been like up until starting Eightfold?
Well, this is my second venture. So now I've been doing startups for almost 15 years. So my background is grew up in India in a small town near North and then moved to US in 1998. Fortunately, the timing worked out well. AI was still in its infancy back in those days, but I got an opportunity to do master's and PhD in machine learning and AI. And that has shaped my career ever since. Spent a year at IBM Research and then followed by a short stint at Google Research, where I led all their personalization efforts. And since then, have been doing startups since year 2009.
Wow. What did you at Google? You said around personalization?
Yeah. No, I was in the research team responsible for most of the personalization efforts at Google.
Wow.
Whether you are searching, reading Google Reader, reading Google News, watching videos, making search queries, right? Making sure that people are getting the results that are relevant to them based on what they have and what all we know about them.
Wow, incredible. And now that's stuff that we're so used to, it's very normal to us. But you were there when that was just getting started?
Yes, we started the personalization team at Google.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how long were you there for?
I was at Google for 4 years.
4 years, okay. So you must have seen quite some shifts during that time. And yes, then after Google, that's when you started your first company?
Correct.
And what did you do? Because obviously, like at Google, you're doing really interesting work. You're meeting a lot of really interesting people. Did some ideas kind of like start percolating there? And did you have to just shoot off and do it on your own? How did you make the jump into entrepreneurship?
So it was the year 2008, which is not the best time to start a company on one side. The market was tumbling down. Everything was falling apart, right? But sometimes you feel like that is your calling. You have to do something.
Yeah.
And more importantly, what you realize is that in a company, large enterprise like Google, as an individual, you can have only so much impact. And second is you are bounded by the constraints imposed by that company. So I was like, can I go outside at that time? And all the technologies around personalization and search that I'm building within Google, can I actually use the same thing to enable much better e-commerce shopping experience? So that was the genesis of my prior company, that Yes, on Google, we are providing you personalization around search, around news, and so on. But can we start providing search and personalization experience when you go to, for example, Sears or Kmart or Staples or any of these shopping websites? Leads to a much better experience for consumers, but also much better value to the business owners, right? So that is what made me leave Google to start Bluebridge, my prior company.
Bluebridge, yeah. And it's that's a big jump, right? Like you said, there's obviously limitations of working inside a company like Google, where, you know, you cannot be as creative or as entrepreneurial as you would be on your own. But obviously, there's also some benefits of working in a large company like that, right? There are some good perks, and there's obviously a lot of support systems behind you. So what was it like when you then first had to venture out on your own and kind of, you know, the good and the bad?
Yeah, suddenly you realize that you're nobody. You have to start from scratch. And you no longer have the excuse of saying that this is what I like to do, what I don't like to do, this is what I can do or cannot do. You have to do everything. But I think the key thing is the common theme that I've seen with most founders, especially who have done well, is they never complain about what they don't have, but more focused on the best they can make out of what they have. To me, it was less about what I'm leaving behind. It was the excitement of building something new.
Yeah. And what part of that did you like the most? Was it the, you know, you were obviously research scientist before that, and you have been working with different teams. Then suddenly you're there, probably not alone. I'm sure you raised and you have built a team. But what was kind of like the part of the role that you liked the most in that new venture?
I think overall, I like everything.
That's good.
Everything.
That makes life easy.
But key thing is that in a startup, it's a full circle experience. So in a big company, right, you are touching small pieces of a big puzzle.
Yeah.
And at some point, no one is touching the full puzzle.
Yeah.
But, and even at 8World now that we are almost 650, 700 people, right? No individual is touching the whole thing, including me. But when you are three, four, five people in a garage, right? Then it is ultimately you who is making everything happen at some level, right? Or you with two people who are making end-to-end
yes.
everything happen.
Yeah.
And all bug stops at you. All accountability stops at you, right? When customer is buying it, they are not buying it because of the product. They are buying it because of you.
Yes.
When someone is joining the company, they are joining because of you. When investors are coming in, they are coming in because of you. So, which has a lot of pressure.
Yeah, I was going to say that has a good and a bad side too, right? If
yeah.
that also means it's all on you. If it doesn't work, it's you.
It's you.
How did you deal with that?
You have no excuses.
You have no excuse.
It took me a while to internalize it, to be honest.
Yeah.
But as I was internalizing it, what it meant for me is that I really have no excuse. If it's not working, I can't go and complain that it's not working because of someone else.
Yeah.
Ultimately, I'm responsible. I need to make it happen. So you have to just analyze that. Yeah, which was fun.
Okay, I could see it worked out. You clearly liked it. You did that for how many years were you in that company? So this is like e-commerce, personalization, all the stuff that we're now used to when we go to like a Walmart or an Amazon. Mm-hmm. You know, you sell a lot more if you can make the recommendations personalized. And then somehow it all led to 8World. So tell us a bit about the origin story, because you're going from personalization in Google to personalization e-commerce. There's still some logical jump, but now suddenly you're doing skills marketplace and talent and recruitment. Very different, it seems, at least from the outside. So what was that? What led to that founding?
No, you're right. Actually, it seems very different from outside. And in fact, traditionally, what people would say is that stay in the same space. I was in the marketing space, go keep building a company in the marketing space or e-commerce space, same buyer, same relationships, right?
Yeah.
And then there were a few reasons to start 8World. The very first thing was realizing how important employment is for people. If we can provide everyone a better career, better job, better employment, the impact on society will be very, very large. So that was the genesis of like, let's do something over here, right? But then the second thing, which is where it all comes together, is first half of my life was all about personalization and recommendations, right? Based on everything that you have done till date, what you have bought, what is it that you're going to buy next?
Right? Yeah.
What about in career? If I can, same thing, based on everything that you have done till date, if I can better understand what you are likely or what you can do next.
Yeah.
So, for example, you may not have ever done coding in Java, but if you have done coding in C++ and Python, what is your likelihood of learning Java quickly? Yes, now suddenly I have opened up more job opportunities for you, right? So key thesis was, it's the same personalization. My last part of my life was building personalization models for users to predict their shopping behavior.
Yeah.
Now let's build models to predict their skills.
And it sounds like that was a very kind of mission-driven, I'm sure it's a good business as well, but it sounds like it was a very mission-driven choice to, again, apply those same learnings and those same technologies to people and to give them better careers. So maybe share a little bit about that.
No, absolutely. It was 100% mission-driven. It was all about, right, if we can help people, right, help individuals. Actually, see, normally when we think of let's do something good for society, we think of education, think of healthcare, but what my realization was that at the heart of each and every of these things is employment. See, we are making all these choices on a daily basis around jobs and careers, right?
Yeah.
For some people, it is about feeding the family. For some people, it is about a bigger purpose. But bottom line is, do I have the right job, right career? And if it's the case, you're happy, you're excited, your day goes much better, right? If not, you scramble.
Yeah.
If you're unhappy at work, you're unhappy at home. If you're unhappy at work, your health goes down. Right. So key thing was that today when people are looking for a job, right, they're always, I mean, I'm sure you have friends and family members who apply for a job will never hear back. I've never not heard back, right?
Yeah.
You're like, I knew this, but the interview just didn't understand what I've done, right? They didn't give me that opportunity, right? All of us have that experience.
Yeah.
So key thing was that through data, through AI, can we help interviewers see past the candidate's just one page resume to understand more what they have done? Similarly, on the other side, for an individual, if they can better understand what is the right role for them, right job for them, right? We can make a much better job at connecting people to opportunities or opportunities to people, right?
Yeah.
We can make it a lot more fluid workforce. And if yes, you don't have to do amazing job, or even if you can make things 5% better, the impact is so large.
Can be hugely impactful. Yeah.
So that was the thesis over here.
Absolutely. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. I love that. You said that employment is so important. I talked to Josh Burson at the beginning of the season, and he said, you know, one thing I hate is when people tell me that they hate their job. You know, they're not happy in what they do. And it's where we spend most of our time, right? Outside of sleeping and maybe some family time, some hobbies. Like, that's really where we spend most of our time. So making work better obviously makes life better. And like you said, those influence each other as well, right? If you come home from a good day at work, you're definitely different in your relationship and in your family and in your community than if you're, you know, not getting meaning out of your job, if you're not getting something out of it beyond just the paycheck.
And actually now, let's just flip it for a second, right? Why does it even work? You might say, this is all fine, Ashu, right? But what makes it a good business? And what makes it a good business? And I mean, you're running your podcast as well, right? If you have employees who are excited or seeing career growth in your company, who are the right fit, your business is going to thrive. Like, it's not always that you need a lot more people. You need the people who are focused on the work, who are excited about the work, who know the work, who can do it, right?
Definitely.
And what I liked about Eightfold and this problem is that the best businesses are where there's such a phenomenal synergy in the entire system. By working with enterprises, by helping them better understand candidates, I can actually solve the problem for both.
Yeah.
So the business are the ones who are employers. That is who we work with. But ultimately, the value we are able to drive is to both of them. And it's not about tricking an individual to take a lower paying job or tricking an enterprise to get not such a good candidate, right? The best outcome happens when it's a great fit between the two. It's good for both of them. And if it's good for both of them,
you can make impact on both sides.
Exactly.
And then it sort of starts the flywheel, right? Because if you bring the right people in, then obviously you hopefully hold on to them better. And that would then obviously eventually really impact the company. So maybe, especially for people who don't know the platform, share a little bit about how Eightfold works. Because I know there's sort of two sides to it. You'll be able to explain it better, but there is a recruitment side too, but there's also a retention, learning, and development side to Eightfold. So maybe just share a little bit in high level how the platform works, because it's very intriguing.
No, absolutely. So high level, the way we describe it is that we have built a talent intelligence platform.
Talent intelligence, yeah.
For the entire talent lifecycle. In an organization, like, what is a talent lifecycle? You're running a business. you have, let's say, 1,000 employees or 10,000 employees, right? And suddenly you realize that over the next 2 years, new technology is coming in, new products are coming in, new market. You need new skill set in your organization to grow or sustain.
Mm.
Now, at the same time, because of the market dynamics, because of how things are internally, maybe there's some churn going on. Some people are leaving, some attrition, right? So what you want to do is first, make sure you're able to retain your right people. Second is you want to make sure that people, if they're not in the right job, you can move them around so that they stay with the deliver. If there are people who have the skill set, but or almost the skill set, but are lacking a few things here and there, you can upskill and develop them so that they meet your future needs. Then you look at your alumni and see, do you have an ongoing relationship with them? Because they are maybe the best source of talent for you. They are biggest brand investors, right?
Yeah.
And then wherever there is a gap, can you actually identify who are the right people to hire and recruit them efficiently at scale?
And the platform helps in that? What's the technology behind it?
Entire end-to-end platform from helping you manage your current employees, understand their skills, develop their skills, upskill, reskill them, provide a talent marketplace, think of success planning for your key leaders or every employee in the company. And then a CRM functionality to engage with every talent who's out in the marketplace and an entire recruiting workflow system to help you hire the right talent efficiently.
Wow. Besides AI, there must be a lot of data involved in terms of understanding people, right? So going back to that recommendation engine kind of idea, you need to understand a lot about that person beyond just the one-page resume, which I'm sure is a terrible indicator for who this person really is and what they're good at and what they're passionate about, what they want to do. And then you need to understand what is needed in the company. So I'm just assuming that this really becomes an operating system for a company, right? Not just like a tool that you use here and there. If your customers want to use it successfully, I'm sure it's implemented throughout their business. So does this really become, yeah, kind of like an OS for the company, and what kind of data that goes into that?
Data is the new life and lifeblood of all these things, right?
Yeah.
Where is the data? Data is in thousands of different public data sources.
Hmm.
Like you might be updating your profile in all kinds of public places, right? Data is sitting over there. Data is sitting in internal HR systems. Data is sitting in enterprise flow of work systems. So you're using Google Docs, you're using Confluence, you're using Jira, you are using Asana, you are using GitHub, you are using Bitbucket, you're using Salesforce CRM, you are using Microsoft Dynamics CRM, you're using hundreds of internal systems, right? Data is sitting all over the place.
Yeah.
You are writing papers, so they are sitting in publication databases outside, right? Your filing patterns are sitting with USP, your other patent databases, right? So what Eightfold does is that for each person brings the data from all these places in one single place, right?
Wow.
But then what the second thing it does is that it looks at the data of each and every other person who are similar to this person to better understand the data of this person. And uses that to build model around each person and each role in the world. So for example, what does it mean to be a senior software engineer at Google in a certain team? What does it mean to have a certain skill? And what experiences you have that might relate to a certain job?
Yeah.
So basically we say that as an AI company, right? You really need to excel in algorithms and you really need to excel in data collection.
Yeah. And you do both.
And you have to do both. And the third thing that actually you have to do is really excel in understanding the user feedback. Recommendation systems, right? With AI. And the good thing with humans is that they are very adaptable. Like if I say something to you, you will listen to me, you will react, right? And that is how AI systems have to be designed. Every interaction is also producing the data. And can we capture that data and can we take the data as a feedback loop that makes a system much better over time?
And that would be, for example, if my company uses Eightfold and Eightfold learns a lot about me, that it shows me different opportunities maybe for new roles or new skills to develop and based on what I'm within the company. Yeah.
Every enterprise's data is their own data.
Yes. So yes.
That. But see, in a company, right? There are courses that you might take, there are mentor coaches, there are projects that you may work on, there are full-time job opportunities within the company, right? How do I understand each person? Everything they have done, say that these are the things that you can do, these are things you can do today, but this is what path you need to be on to get there over time, right? Who can mentor you to get there, what courses you can do to get there, what skills you need to develop, right? And then let's say I show a job to you which is about product management, but I see that you're not excited about that. You're more excited about marketing, right?
Yeah.
So how can you now update the system to automatically guide you around marketing, right? So constantly learning from your interaction with the system.
And then I'm very curious, right? So in that case, if the system realizes that somehow it's seeing something in my data, maybe my conversations, maybe any data source that it has access to, right? So it's seeing that actually, I think you would probably fit the marketing track better. And I know that those positions are open in the company. Is there still any human involved then on saying, yeah, but I don't want that person to move to a marketing role? Because sometimes those can be conflicting. Maybe at a company level, we want people to be in the right roles, but maybe at a team level, my manager would want me to stay in my position because it's hard to replace me, right? Like, where does the human then, is there an opportunity to override or to set a temperature meter like you do in AI on how much do we recommend versus how much do we kind of dictate?
And companies can set their own policies and the organization. But yes, change management is a big part of what we have to go through.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Because as a brand manager, I may not want my team to disperse at all, right? I may want to hold that talent, right?
Yes.
But at the company level, if people don't move around, I mean, my culture will not grow.
Yeah.
Right? I will not learn from people. In fact, these people will eventually leave if they don't get another option for the company, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes what companies do is they will set up the policy that, okay, for the first 18 months, you cannot move. But after the company for 18 months, and if your performance is, let's say, above a certain threshold, then you can move within the company.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm very curious about this almost competition between individual teams and their leaders and then the company as a whole. Because I'm sure that like before using a platform like Eightfold, this would have been invisible to a company leadership, right? They would not really know that people are stuck in the wrong role so that a manager is preventing them from moving on. But the moment you make that a machine, you make that a platform, now these insights do maybe go to the top and maybe we see where people are being blocked and maybe we see some reasons why there's attrition, right? Why there's a lack of retention in teams.
Absolutely. And I would say that things are changing. Five years back, when we were talking about internal mobility, I mean, this was the number one questions people asked, what you're asking now.
Yeah.
Actually, over the last 2 years, I think that noise has gone down dramatically.
What caused that?
I think as COVID happened, people realized that how important it is to focus on their own employees, own teams. They also realized during the time of great resignation that people are going to move.
Yeah.
They need to give them the opportunities, right?
Yeah.
And as part of that, even managers realize that, I mean, that's the new world we are living in. But one thing which is interesting and we don't talk about it is most managers themselves have been in the job for less than a year or two, right? Sometimes once you internalize, right? If I've been switching and that is what I want.
Yes.
I can't stop my team from doing the same thing, right?
Yeah.
So I think now people are a lot more okay with this thing.
Is there any, on the recruiting side, is there any issue around, you know, you're getting a lot of data in, is there any issue around bias in terms of the platform maybe recommending certain people for certain roles that would maybe not be in line with how a human recruiter would do it? Not to say that human recruiters don't have bias, but you know the topic, yeah.
No, absolutely. And I think that's a great question, right? And key thing is using data bring transparency in the whole process. So one is the way the system has been designed. Humans are in full control of what is happening over there. So a very simple example is when you are creating a requirements for a role, right? Today, we don't even understand the implication of diversity because of that. For example, I may just say that I'm looking for someone with these 20 skills, right? Now, I may just say it, not realize that all these skills are not really needed and some of these skills are more biased towards or biased against women and getting the gender over there, right? So at each step in the process, the way the system has been built, we give the transparency and have human input. So humans modify and adopt and adjust things based on their organizational needs. Second thing is we have built the way the AI has been designed, and that is a key thing over here, is with the bias elimination in mind or reduction in bias in mind. So I think the more important question could be that if there is bias in the data, are you going to perpetuate bias or are you going to reduce bias, right?
Yeah.
And the way our system has been designed, We call these equal employment opportunity algorithms that specifically take into account how our model's performance is going to be for each gender class, each race, ethnicity class, and so on. And then we provide rich analytics so that as an enterprise, you can monitor at each step in the interview process, is bias creeping in?
Yeah.
So simple thing is, let's say 100 males and 100 females apply for the same job. And so at the top of the funnel, the ratio is 50-50, right? When you're doing the phone screen, are you inviting now more men than women? Yes, system will flag and then say that there's some bias going on over here. So actually it helps not only the algorithms are designed well, it also helps reduce the human bias.
Yeah.
And one very simple example of what we do is that when you're looking at a resume, right, or a profile of a candidate, we can mask all the things like name, gender, race.
Everything that gives it away.
So that you can only focus on what's relevant for the role.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's something so interesting in what you said, that if it goes wrong at the level of writing the job description, of writing the job requirements, then it's almost like it doesn't matter what happens in the next stages, right? And maybe we write job descriptions almost already thinking about what the ideal candidate looks like, and there may be bias in how we write that JD, right? So then already before we even get the platform involved, before we even speak to the first person, we've already adjusted the funnel to make it work within what we think is the right person, right? And so a system like this could then detect that and maybe give recommendations too, right? Because probably you know better. Maybe the platform would know better who to hire or like what is the right profile than the hiring manager even.
Let's say as a hiring manager, and you, let's say hypothetically you're a recruiter, I'm a hiring manager, right? I said, what I'm really looking for is someone who knows Java, Python, or C++. Sounds simple, right? You're like, okay, Ashu's a hiring manager. He knows what he is looking for, right? So, right? And I'm looking for a data scientist role. So I'm looking for a data scientist who knows Java, C++, or Python, right? What if you come and tell me that, Ashu, most people who know Python are actually, there are a lot more men who know Python than women. Right. But if you really want diversity balance, then maybe you should look for language R as well, which has a lot more female population than men. And you will have a much more balanced set of candidates coming in.
Yeah.
And in general, in that case, my reaction will be, oh, I didn't know that. Sure. Absolutely. It's all same for me, right?
Yeah. Why not? Yeah.
But the first time I just didn't know, and I may just bias myself against one class than the other one, right?
Yeah.
I says, if has information around how the data is distributed, right?
Yeah. And then those people get hired. You said like maybe some one of the data sources could be the actual collaboration platforms they're using. Maybe some data sources could be the HRIS. So you could see things around, again, how long do people stay in a role? What are the performance reviews? Maybe even how do they work day to day? Does that allow you also then to almost like go back and create a sharper profile for who the next person in that role should be because you collect so much data?
Absolutely. And I think that the way we have designed the system on even on day one, more often than not, instead of asking you what you're looking for, we just ask you who are the top five performers in your team so that we can build a profile based on that.
Wow. Yeah.
Because quite a few times, I mean, when you describe inwards, you do all kind of, you bring all bias, right?
Yeah.
Well, I'm really looking for someone who's outgoing, who's very talkative, who can do this thing, who is, no, just tell me what are the five people, right? Let me look at what experiences they have, what skill set they have, right?
Yeah.
And you realize that, no, actually half the things you're talking about are not even relevant. And you are missing out on relevant stuff.
Yeah. So
having that ideal candidate profile actually helps a lot in building the right models.
But it seems like on that topic of bias, that there is a lot of tension between people and the system. Somehow the systems get called out for inducing bias or perpetuating bias. And there's a lot of regulation now coming in around, you know, we need to do bias audits and these things. But obviously humans are incredibly biased, incredibly flawed generally. And it seems like maybe there's some opportunity here to correct also people in, you know, when you're saying that I need to hire this and this person, if you say from the get-go that it has to be someone really outgoing and these and these and these qualities, maybe, again, you're already skewing the JD and therefore the interview process and therefore the final candidate towards a certain person that you kind of have in mind.
Absolutely. And the way to think about it is following, right? That there's a conscious bias and there's a subconscious bias. Quite a few times the conscious bias comes from, I mean, if there's someone in your team who's actually biased, right?
Yeah.
Through analytics, we'll capture it and show it back to you. But more importantly, right, I think 80-90% people are good. They want to do the right thing. But bias comes in because we don't have all the information. Suppose I didn't know that Python versus R could have a different demographic profile. I mean, like I told you in the beginning of this podcast, right, that I was at Google. And you're like, oh yeah, you were at Google, so you must know all these things, right? If I had taken the name of a much smaller company that is not as successful, you would have completely ignored it. Even though that company may have really high quality talent who might have worked really well.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. If I say I went to Stanford, you'll be like, oh, Ashu, that is awesome. It's a great institute, right?
Yeah.
If I say I went to BITS Plani in India, you're like, what? Where did you go? I don't know that a school is that.
Yeah.
So lack of knowledge or one recruiter may know one thing, another recruiter may know another thing.
Yeah.
And through AI, what we are able to do is to democratize that information across everyone. Everyone has access to the same assistant, right? And that helps a lot.
Yeah, I can imagine it now speaks to people probably way more than even 2 years ago, because now that people have seen that, oh, I can talk to this bot who somehow has all the knowledge in the world. Maybe now this idea comes to life more. Has it become easier to sell in this kind of solution now that the decision makers are maybe a little bit more understanding of AI in their own daily lives? Because I'm assuming it was hard early on.
Yes. Like till 2 years back, the conversation at times would have been that, do I need AI or not?
Yeah.
Now, no one is questioning that. People are like, yes, of course, I can do AI, right? So in that sense, it has become a lot easier for us.
Yeah, it speaks much more to people now.
Yeah, 7 years ago, when we started the company, people are like, why are you even putting AI in your name, right? Like, why are you so fascinated by AI?
Right.
Now, 7 years later, looks like you made the right call back in those days.
Yeah, definitely. Yes, definitely. So you must be quite thankful to OpenAI and ChatGPT for somehow educating the masses on what AI can do. And where do you see AI's biggest power within what you do? So you say about, you know, unlocking maybe information people don't even know that helps them make much better hiring decisions or better retention programs. What are some ways in which the AI really, really helps?
I think as of today, it really helps on the understanding side, right? Inferencing. But I would say that over time, it will enable us to do a lot more things, a lot more efficiently. Whether how do we upskill the talent? How do we teach and guide our employees? How we craft the projects? How do we build teams? How do we take various actions? There are so many manual processes that happen in the HR space, right? Especially the ones that are very tedious, cumbersome, that no one likes to do.
Yeah.
We can start also automating some of those as well, right? And then scope is unlimited. The way to think about these days, the AI is no longer that, what is this new piece of technology?
Yeah.
Another simpler way, I would say, is that as a HR person, right? I already have a team of 20 people who are doing great work, but they are overworked. Suddenly, I get an army of another 20 people who are comfortable doing any amount of grunt work for me. What more can I do? How can I make my company a lot happier, a lot more efficient, right? So I think that is how I'm thinking about AI.
Yeah, so it really frees us up to do the work that we're good at as humans, and that's hopefully a lot more meaningful than a lot of the admin work that we were doing and sitting in endless meetings and messaging back and forth. If AI can take over a bunch of that stuff, then hopefully we can do the things that are, you know, are meaningful to us and that we enjoy doing, which I think is much more important to your point about, you know, there's something very important to be done in employment and in work. I guess like one final question around regulation, right? Because you're in the AI space, I'm sure you're keenly aware of a lot of regulation being either proposed or being implemented. And California, there is an act now implemented, and maybe in other states not. You said you have about 700 people. Are quite a few people in that team tracking all these regulations and in all the markets that you're working in? How do you even keep up with everything that's being proposed that may affect the way that the platform would work?
One, if you are trying, I mean, regulations are going to be here. They're already here. More and more are coming. Second is, instead of fighting the regulations, you have to just embrace those regulations. Many of those regulations are designed with the right purpose in mind.
Yeah.
Third is, it's not about one state has a regulation and another does not, right?
Mm.
See, if there's a state which does not have regulations today, they will have regulations in a year from now or 2 years from now.
And you're trying to anticipate what that's going to be?
So we have been worrying about bias from day one, not once the regulations came in. So when New York law came in, we're like, sure, yeah, let's do the audit. Who cares? I mean, we'll be fine.
Yeah.
Right? EUAI Act, sure. We are not worried about it because we have gotten our audit done multiple times. Our audit reports are on our website, all kind of things, right? You have to be ahead of those regulations. You have to design the systems with all those things in mind. And if you are following the law, just part of the law, you'll be fine. You don't have to worry about if there's a lightweight regulations in other states. But if you're barely trying to get by some of these laws, then you will always struggle.
Yeah.
So this has not been an issue for us at all.
Okay. But I'm sure there must be someone on your team pretty stressed when they hear about a new...
The good thing is that my general counsel, he and I did PhD together in machine learning.
Okay.
He knows law and he knows AI. So I'm like, please take care of all, making sure that... In fact, I'll give you one example. It's not a regulation yet anywhere. I think almost 3 years back, we started an AI ethics council at Eightfold.
So what did it do?
We got the ex-commissioner of EEOC, ex-director of OFCCP, and a few other people, and said that let's have an AI ethics council. This council will meet once a quarter, review all the AI work we are doing, and making sure that not only we are following all the rules and regulations and laws as they are coming in, but so we are up to date with all that stuff, but also putting all the checks and balances internally. So that has been very, very effective for us.
What does ethical AI even mean in that context? What would they test it against?
The way to think about ethical AI is, one is it meets all the laws of the land. Second is it is very transparent. So that you understand what it is doing. It keeps the human in the loop at the right time, in the right way. Under the standard definitions of bias, it is able to ensure that the way system is working, the bias is not creeping in. In fact, it is getting reduced and eliminated.
Yeah.
Now, they are, of course, very complex definitions of ethics, right? And maybe there will be a time and day to discuss that as well.
Definitely not today, because I see we're getting to the end of the time. So I'll close on something a lot lighter, which is maybe one wish that you have for the future of work.
I think, first of all, I mean, you're doing a fantastic job capturing these topics, right? I wish great success to you and the Future of Work podcast.
Thank you.
Hopefully it will get to every person in the world, right? I think work is material, important for all of us. So thank you for the future with us.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Okay. And then we definitely have 1 minute left. So then I also want to ask you one piece of career advice that you would give someone, because you're really at a position that a lot of people would aspire to, right? What is something that you would recommend someone to do in their own career?
Follow your heart. But stay true to yourself. If you want to do something, actually do it. Commit to it. Have a big impact, right? We are living in amazing times. Who would have thought technology would have come so far?
Yeah.
This is the best time ever. I mean, the world is our oyster. Technology is making everything possible, right? So I would say follow your heart, follow your passion, do something that is good for humanity, good for our society, right? And everything else will follow.
Amazing. Make a beautiful impact. Could not have asked for better closing words. Ashutosh, thank you so much for being on today.
Thank you. Thank you for doing this.
Thanks so much for tuning in. Here are the four key takeaways from my conversation with Ashutosh Garg, the founder and CEO of HR tech unicorn Eightfold AI. Number one, career development and employee retention with AI. We've learned that AI's potential to tailor career paths to individual skills and aspirations can dramatically transform employee growth and satisfaction. By aligning opportunities closely with personal competencies, organizations can maximize employee potential, drive engagement, and keep the best people longer. Number two, human in the loop. This new way of thinking about people also means sometimes a team or manager has to give up on a great employee to benefit the greater good, central to the theme of Josh Persin's dynamic organizations at the beginning of this season. It also means that even the smartest AI platform will always have a human in the loop to control its impact on an organization. Number three out of four, reducing bias with AI tools. AI platforms can significantly reduce human biases that often influence hiring decisions. By standardizing processes and focusing on data-driven assessments, AI helps ensure that recruitment is based on merit and qualifications, not unconscious biases, leading to fairer employment practices. I really loved Ashutosh's point that this starts even at a job description, where we need to be objective about the kind of tasks done in the role that we're hiring for. And the last one, creating a better world of work. Ashutosh's mission with Eightfold is to create a better world of work, a place where employment is more than a necessity, but a fulfilling part of life. AI can transform the workplace into a more satisfying and productive environment by matching individuals to careers that genuinely fit their skills and aspirations. So that's it for today. Join me again next week when I interview no one other than Lars Schmidt from Amplify HR. Subscribe for updates at flexos.org/futurework.